I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Inside Sources.
Inside Sources.
America's voice of reason. Boyd Matheson.
On Utah's home for elevated conversation.
Inside Sources on KSL News Radio.
Well, when it comes to Congress of late, it's hard to have either an efficiency or an effectiveness conversation because it just doesn't seem to be happening. But we do have to have both. There's got to be efficiency. There's got to be effectiveness. And not just because it makes our representatives better, but it benefits us as constituents. This year, the House created a subcommittee for modernization intended to help the chamber just work a little better. I think it's time for the Senate to follow in the footsteps. I think everyone can at least find some areas there. And some of this doesn't necessarily change the way things are done on the Senate floor, but there are some things that impact constituents directly that really are worth having a conversation about. And so we're going to have a conversation about it. We're really thrilled to have Ryan Williamson, who's the governance fellow at the R Street Institute, back on with us. And Ryan, as you look at this in terms of the Senate, you came up with a couple of things that I think everybody can say, okay, how can we not modernize that way and still preserve the integrity of what's supposed to be the greatest deliberative body on the planet?
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me. There are three things that I think, you know, are pretty straightforward and could really improve how things work. They could improve how things are scheduled within the chamber, make casework easier for members and staff, and find ways to kind of foster greater agreement and bipartisanship and just improve civility within the Senate.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of those in terms of what that means in the day-to-day operation, what it could mean in terms of constituent services. That's we often refer to that as casework. What are some of the things that you see happening there, and what are some of the best practices or things we ought to be doing a little different?
Yeah, so when we talk about casework, this is kind of the direct services that a member of Congress can provide, you know, a lost Social Security check, an application to an armed services school, you know, just navigating the federal bureaucracy, things like that. And so, you know, a lot of times new members come in and, you know, people don't get elected to Congress because of their constituent service. They have policies, they're going to pursue bills and things of that nature, but this is still a really important job.
Yeah.
And so just some sort of centralized place where staff can say, like, okay, who's the contact on here? How can we, you know, efficiently and effectively meet the needs of constituents?
Yeah, and I think that's such a vital component to it. And just as a personal note, all of those who work in constituent services in the House and in the Senate are heroes. They do a lot of the hard work and heavy lifting. The senators or the members of Congress usually get the credit in the end, which is fine. Their name's on the door. But those caseworkers do just amazing work in all of those areas that you just described. And we've had some things even here in the state of Utah on the Senate side where Senator Romney and Senator Lee actually combined constituent services, because one of the things I always noticed as when I was chief of staff was how often a constituent who has a problem isn't sure what to do. And so they engage with their representative and they engage with all, you know, both Senate offices from their state. And suddenly you've got three different groups that are all attacking the same thing. And often they ended up in conflict or undermining each other intentionally or not, that slowed down the service that the constituent actually needed.
Absolutely. And you know, like you said, it's so important. This work is vital. It's something that affects us very directly. And so it may seem relatively small in scale or innocuous, but as you pointed out, this is really important work. And at a time when the public does not view Congress favorably, only about 1 in 5 people approve of the job it's doing, this could be a really simple but effective way for Congress to kind of improve its standing amongst the public.
Yeah. And let's dive into the one of the other pieces that you got to, which was improving scheduling. A lot of people don't think that through. What does it actually mean when you talk about scheduling committees, subcommittees, and so on?
Right. So, you know, there are only 100 senators, but there's 24 full committees and 71 subcommittees. And so your average senator has five committee assignments and maybe a dozen subcommittee assignments. And, you know, they'll bring in witnesses who are experts on issues that they can hear about and ask questions of. And they'll have markups where they'll, you know, go through the text of a bill before it gets to the Senate floor. But there are so many demands on a senator's time that they're often only in those hearings long enough to say their piece, and then they're out. They have to go to a fundraising event. They have to go to the floor to vote. They have to go to some other committee hearing. And so there's a lot of scheduling conflicts that keep senators from being able to kind of really get into the weeds at some of these hearings and meetings.
Yeah, and I think that's so important because it's part of making hearings again, and not just performative pieces where, as you rightly described it, a senator waltzes in, they've got their 5 minutes, they use 4.5 of it to get a social media moment or a potential spot on a cable news network, they listen to 30 seconds of a response from a witness, and then they're out, and the next senator goes. But actually having and requiring attendance in those places, I think, is such an important thing to where they actually have to sit and listen to each other, to witnesses and experts. I think that would definitely change the conversation.
Absolutely. And like you pointed out, like getting to hear from other members, identifying potential allies that they can work with together, and then developing that expertise and that nuance that is necessary when it comes to actually conducting good oversight and drafting effective policy.
Mm. Oh, and that's so important. I'm so glad you raised that because that's such a key piece of it, because there is we talk about the big broad ideas and what a bill is or isn't, but you have to get the legal language, the legislative language is no easy thing to make sure it's not doing something that wasn't intended or it is doing something unintended. Those are all things to work through. And I want to close out with the final area that you pointed out, which is improving civility. And part of the reason you pointed out that I just love in the Senate is this isn't just nice to be nice. This is nice because of the requirements in the Senate. That 60-vote threshold means you have to have some allies on both sides of the aisle if you're actually going to be productive and get something done.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And when we're talking about the narrow majorities that we've been witnessing in recent years, and you know, more and more parties or members are just voting along party lines, it's harder to get things done. And so things just don't get done, or the chambers kind of resorts to these really high stake, non-traditional ways of getting things done, like the nuclear option, for example, or reconciliation or what have you. And so just trying to get members to see each other as colleagues and, you know, humanize them and think about, like, how can I, like, trying to find agreement with somebody instead of viewing them as the opposition that has to be defeated could really improve how the chamber works.
Yeah. Anything else you're seeing on the horizon there, or anything? We know the House has gone down this path in terms of some modernization pieces. Any rumblings on the Senate side at this point?
There's been a member or two who has kind of, you know, maybe express some interest, but I hope that more kind of see the bipartisan and nonpartisan utility of this and the success that the House has had. And I hope someone's brave enough to take up the mantle and run with it.
Could not agree more. Ryan Williamson's governance fellow at the R Street Institute. Ryan, thanks for raising this and for leading the discussion there. I think these are crucial things to modernize the Senate in a way that preserves the very thing that members of both sides of the aisle say they want to preserve in the Senate. But if we do it this way, we can actually do it a little bit better. Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. We will step aside for one last break. And when we come back, we're going to come full circle where we began the day today. We're going to invite every member of Congress in the House and the Senate, both sides of the aisle, and President Biden to the kitchen table. Because we think at the kitchen table is where you actually solve problems. And we think we can do that. Stick around and be part of that conversation coming up next.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.